We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 342. What's up, Scott? How's it going? A sweep of the Rays kind of turned around after that ugly road trip. Came home, swept the Rays.
Yeah, good start. We were saying that this was an important series coming up and an important homestand leading up to, you know, the whole big July, really. I mean, with the London series and the All-Star game and playing Boston 97 times, you know, at the end and then leading into August. And so there's a lot of good big things happening that are also extracurricular. So, yes, good start. Very good start. I'm glad that we treated the Devil Rays as they should be treated, like the little stepchildren of the American League East who can barely afford their power bill.
So are you, I saw you trolling the Rays account. The Rays account is not afraid to get into it with people on Twitter.
I'm really trying to bait them. I really want to get into them.
Although I feel like something that they're self-conscious about is the trop.
That's not true because they show like the speaker. They celebrated the speaker, the fact that they would make outs with the speaker. That's my theory why they have four outfielders, because they're actually used to playing in the trop and they got to play the bounces. So that's why they have four outfielders, cheating bastards.
Yeah, you gotta get those caroms. Those are tricky.
Yeah, it's like playing wall ball, man. You gotta like, we would play at my garage at home where I grew up, and you know the door of the garage had like panes on it. So if you hit that pane right, you got to know that bounce. It's a big bounce.
It's a home field. I mean, it's a home field advantage.
There's no doubt.
If you can play it right,
it will pop up. It will pop up on you when you're not expecting it, and you will get your ass pegged.
That's like how some grounds crews cut the grass right on the foul line, where others have it maybe a foot or two off of the foul line. Every infield is different. Sometimes, do you remember this? I don't know if this is myth or it actually happened, but in the later days of Jeter and A-Rod, on the left side of the infield, the grounds crew would have the grass slightly longer, so ground balls would slow down so that Jeter and A-Rod could get to them better.
I mean, probably.
Probably, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if there's someone regulating that, if like MLB comes in and measures the petals of grass.
For what, though? There's no, they're blades of grass. They're not petals of grass. Let's get that straight.
Blades of grass, whatever. Sorry, I don't have a lawn.
I do, and they're blades of grass.
I may be old, but I'm not old enough to have a lawn yet.
There's not. Oh yeah. By the way, see this? I'm forgetting everything. It's your birthday today. Happy birthday. You're officially in your mid 30s. Congratulations.
No, that's bullshit. 31 is still early 30s. Although I'm not going to lie, 31.
It kind of stings, doesn't it?
Whatever reason sounds older than 30.
Cause it is.
I didn't even really care when I hit 30 last year. Yeah. I mean, first of all, I still feel the same as I did when I was 27 or 26 mentally. Anyway, I don't feel any different. I know my life has changed a lot and it's about to change a lot in the next few months, but I don't feel old. Like, when does that happen? Do you feel old yet? You're almost 40.
Yeah, no, I don't. It's weird. Well, you know, sometimes there are moments, but I don't like,
you're not talking. I'm not talking about physically.
I have a child's mind.
I have a child
and I have a child's mind. I probably won't ever, you know, fully mature mentally. I feel like that ship has sailed and I'm just going to be this person and I'll probably get way more crotchety as I get older. I could definitely see me becoming, you know, like really, really getting into the get off my lawn mode.
Well, that's troublesome for me, not giving a rat's ass.
I feel like I'm
already more crotchety than you are and I'm 8 years younger than you.
There's a difference between crotchety and then just like looking at the negative side of everything.
Cynical. I'm cynical.
Yeah. Yeah. You're a very cynical person. Very cynical. Well, as far as baseball.
I think I lean cynical in life in general. My humor is cynical. I tend to always see the negative in things.
Right.
But that makes the positive things that much better. That's why when something good happens on the baseball field anyway, as it relates to this podcast, I think that makes it a little bit sweeter than everything is unicorns and show ponies and it's just everything is rainbows and fun. Like, no, I can't go through a whole baseball season like that. I don't think anyone would even want to listen to a podcast that's like that.
I don't know. There's some rainbow podcasts out there. But they're
not as good as ours.
The thing is you have to be, if you're doing that, you're lying to yourself. You're lying to yourself about what's actually happening. Although there are some times when, you know, things are going okay. they're not going terribly.
Well, yeah.
And the negativity can take over, and then I have to like try to like pump some air into the you know, the positivity and the balloons and stuff, so we can actually stay in an actual reasonable lane.
That's the yin and yang of having,
like, last week you were trying to get to that point, and I was like fighting it. I was like giving uppercut shots in the beginning.
What did I even say? I don't even remember. Last week could have been 2 years ago.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was.
Podcast time. We've talked about this before. Time does not exist in podcast time.
It doesn't. It doesn't exist. I have no idea what I did yesterday.
Because we were just saying before we recorded, we were trying to figure out how old we each were when we met and the website started, and right. We figured out that you were 31, about 31 in that area when I first started writing with nyyuniverse.com.
And I had just gotten married.
Okay.
It's kind of like full circle right now. It's kind of weird.
8 years ago.
Yeah.
2011. And then when the podcast kicked off, I was 27. You were 35, 34-ish, sometime around there.
I don't know.
Math is not our strong suit. But I don't know where I was going. Where was I going with
that? I have no
podcast time. When the podcast started, it was 4 years ago, going on 5 years ago. Last week, no
right,
difference.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's time. It's tough to gauge time, you know, when you're going through these every week. So, but man, you know what? It's been fun. This was a fun week. This was a fun week of baseball, and I'm glad that we have some good things, because when you go and lose eight out of your last 11. You're looking at some doomsday things. You're looking at doomsday with the pitching. You're looking at all sorts of stuff going on, right? And now that they've won five in a row, the pitching has been tremendously better. We, you know, have given some room between the Rays and even the Red Sox. So a lot of good things happening right now.
Yeah, I think you have to. I'm trying to split the difference on the pitching in those 11 games when they lost eight in a row, and then the pitching over the last five games, where I have some stats here where the starting pitching has been tremendous. I feel like it's somewhere in the middle with the actual level of this rotation. Wouldn't you agree?
I think it's hard to see where it's hard to tell where they are right now, because I again, like, I'm really happy that CC had a good game today. We're recording this on what day is today? Wednesday. I have no idea. I've been in freaking Alabama for 3 days. I literally don't even know where what is happening.
Yeah, I saw your adventures trying to get some booze.
It was brutal. But, you know, again, CC pitched well today, right? We're looking at what he did. Good stuff. Like, that's awesome and really, really good. It's just, where's he going to be in July? What's this team going to look like? July, August. What's the pitching staff going to look like? So it's hard to tell where we are right now. Paxton coming back from that injury, you know, it's pretty clear that he's, you know, we're not going to know what he is until he gets, you know, I think a few more under his belt and he can really get into the season and hopefully healthy. And then I'll have a better judge, I feel like, of who he really is at this point, even though he was good the last time out. So positive steps.
Right. The rotation the last five turns. So dating back to five starts ago, it was the opener with Chad Green and Cortez came in, and they combined to go 7 innings, 7 hits, 2 earned runs. Paxton the next day out goes 6 innings. Gave up 8 hits, and we kind of talked about how it wasn't the sharpest Paxton. Actually, no, we didn't talk about it I briefly talked about Paxton after that. What I liked about that start from Paxton is he threw deeper into the game. We hadn't seen that yet since he came back from the IL. Then Tanaka, I mean, completely nuts up with a complete game shutout. So Tanaka, who had been struggling and had been having weird innings, every now and again, he'd give up 4 runs, and you're like, "Who is this Tanaka? Something went wrong." And then, boom, it's a blow up inning. Well, that was his best start of the season, and maybe his best start since last year when he threw a complete game against the Tampa Rays.
Yeah, I mean, and it seems like looking at some of these numbers against the against Tampa, I mean, he's had phenomenal year against the Tampa Rays. He's the you know, the opposite of what happens with the Orioles, but against a good team.
Yeah, a 1 earned run in 22 innings. I'd say that's pretty freaking good.
I like that. I like that a lot. And he has had success down at the Trop too. Now it's proven that he has the success up top in the Bronx. So, you know, look, I think if you're looking at what's happened in the season as far as if we're trying to rate, see where they are. I mean, Tanaka, I think, you know, as long as you can clean up those weird innings, which are almost an anomaly, they're happening too consistent
well,
to be an anomaly.
This is the point in the season, the last 2 years where we've seen Tanaka ramp up.
June 30th, I think, was the date.
Yeah, so we're approaching that date where the first 2 months of the season, he's inconsistent, he's figuring it out, or he just plain looks bad.
Yeah.
I feel like this year he hasn't been bad.
No.
He's been inconsistent and at times almost lost. But I say that like he's lost because he doesn't have a splitter and he's trying to figure it out, figure shit out on the fly. And we've seen some bad starts from him. We've also seen some really good starts from him, like that outing Monday. And it was such a clutch performance because you're facing the first place Rays, but you're starting a homestand. It may be the most important homestand of the season. I don't think that's an exaggeration
to
say when you're facing the Rays, for the second place team, and then the Astros, who I think are probably
the biggest
roadblock to you making the World Series.
Well, I mean, I would definitely put the Red Sox in there as well. But yeah,
okay, one of the two best teams in the league.
Absolutely. I think when they're fully healthy, even though they've been hit with some injury bugs, but when they're fully healthy, they're definitely talent level, one of the top teams, if not the top team.
So you kick it off with a complete game shutout, shove the bats down their throats. That was a very clutch performance.
No doubt about it. I mean, that's the thing. That's when you're seeing him put that together. And I know a lot of people were they wanted it. I'm just gauging social media, right? When we're
dangerous.
Looking at this. I know, but also gauging like the way that the stadium felt and all these things, right? Everybody wanted Tanaka to come back out. Everybody.
I was surprised.
Chapman was
even
warming 100 up.
100 pitches after 8 innings. That is usually like an easy
just
button for Boone to press. We're going to the bullpen.
But I think Boone likes these types of moments where he wants that guy to go back out there. And you could tell that Tanaka wanted to do it. And again, I think there's a level of what Boone does sometimes with some of his guys that he does try to show them more faith, as a lot of faith, and get that confidence up. And I think sometimes it kind of blows up on him, but that's one of the things that we've seen, is that Boone likes to give these guys that extra jolt of confidence. And if they say or look or have a way about them that even though it's against the numbers, even though he's at that magic number 100, even though the nerds in the tunnel are like screaming obscenities at him to get him out of the game, he's like, you know what? I'm going to boost this guy's confidence. I have faith in him. Send him out there. And it worked. And the stadium loved it. Fans on social media loved it because everybody wanted him to go out and finish that game.
Yeah, and I also think not every pitch is created equal. And by that, I mean stress level. That was not a stressful 100 pitches that he had thrown.
Yeah.
So if he had battled through a few hard innings and he's at 100 pitches, then maybe they decided to take him out. But he ended up throwing 111 pitches. And I do think that is a boost to the team. I think his teammates loved seeing it. I think we've seen it in past seasons. I think to the game when Severino threw his complete game shutout. Actually, I don't even remember if it was a shutout. It was a complete game in Houston against the Astros. And that sort of kicked off a mini run for the team. I think performances like Tanaka's on Monday can give the team extra energy.
Look, I think this team, when they see a really good pitching performance like that, they get more confident as a unit, because they know damn well what's happening with the offense. They know that they've stayed afloat, and not even just afloat, but stayed extremely competitive and very good with all of these guys that have replaced the big names. Now everybody's coming back. Now they got a big bat with Encarnacion. Stanton's back.
Judge is back
about
this
to come
weekend.
Back. So they know the ball is going to start flying out of the park even more. And they also know that they're getting revamped. Like, this is crazy, because we were waiting and just hoping that the team could hold out until these guys come back. And they've done that. They've absolutely done that. So they know.
They were on their last lifeline.
So close to dropping, but they kept it on. And now they know they're going to score runs. They're going to score runs. So when they see one of their guys, their you know, number 1-2 pitcher, whatever you want to call him, come out there and dominate and throw a complete game shutout against the team that's in first place currently, or right there with you, like, that's a huge jolt. So I think it gives a lot of people confidence, and that's a big deal. You know,
you're saying number 1 or 2 pitcher, whatever he is, it's him and Paxton need to step up and be the number 1 and number 2 pitcher in this rotation until either Severino comes back healthy and or they trade for a pitcher. It's going to happen. They're going to trade for a pitcher.
Right.
So the current guys who you need to be trusting most are Tanaka and Paxton. Tanaka showed up. And just breaking down his start, you know, what was different about his start? Why did this one work out so well for him? His pitch mix was essentially the same, relying on four-seam fastballs, sliders, and splitters. The biggest difference I could find is that his splitter was unhittable, like it has been in past season. He got five swings and misses on it. He gave up no hits on the splitter. I mean, he only gave up three hits the whole game. So all of them came against his four-seam fastball, but none against his splitter, which had been getting tattooed.
Yeah, which, you know, so when you're seeing it, this game was cruising along too. Like it was had a really good pace to it.
I love those.
It was awesome. That's why I remember I was texting you. I was like, I can't, you know, this game happened so fast because I was going to do the video for it. By the time I got back, it was already like the sixth or seventh inning. So that's good things. Like you're seeing that, you're seeing the pace of the game going well. He's throwing strikes. He's able to work his different pitch mix because he's able to throw strikes. That's when he's good. I mean, that's when most pitchers are good. But when you have a repertoire like Tanaka, yeah, when you could throw that many pitches, what, five pitches for strikes? Then
swinging strike. He got five swinging strikes.
No. I'm talking about all of his pitches. When you're throwing your pitches for strikes, you can work off of that much more, and it just makes your secondary pitches
still
more effective.
He's still basically a three pitch pitcher.
Yeah.
He did mix in a couple curveballs. We were talking about this in the back end Facebook chat. I thought he threw more curveballs than the 3% that he threw because I noticed them. He used them at key times and they were all very good curveballs.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, a Tanaka curveball. I feel like I haven't seen that.
That's the thing. When he sprinkles in all of his pitches, because he does have a deeper repertoire than...
It was a good curveball. It was a nice little 12 to 6 kind of 1 to 1 a.m. to 7, 6, 7, whatever. Clock.
When's the last time you looked at a clock?
I'm going to do digital, baby. Whatever it was a nice curveball.
Yeah. 12 to 6. That's
it wasn't quite 12 to 6 though. It had a little bit more slide action on it, but it was definitely a big breaker.
Okay. Big breakers. but no, that's the thing. Like I think when his confidence goes up too, you know, he's starting to think of early days when he's throwing all sorts of pitches over in Japan.
Yeah, kitchen sink.
He's got more of these specialty pitches up his sleeve. It's just a matter of being confident and being able to getting cocky with it. And maybe he's getting a little more cocky with throwing that 1-7 curveball.
And this means Tanaka's lined up for the June 22nd event. That let's address the elephant in the room. Why don't we? Everyone is going to be at except me.
Yep, you're not going to be there. It's unfortunate. It really is.
It sucks. I am. So it's my bachelor party this weekend.
Yes.
So next episode that you hear me, I'm going to be dead. But it was planned before we planned the Bronx Pinstripes events. And then you know as well as I do, try to get 10 grown adults to change a weekend plan they already agreed on. Not going
to
happen.
No, I mean, we tried to look at where the games were and actually not have it on that day.
June is such a weird schedule. There's basically, this is the only home game in June.
Well, I mean, the whole
home weekend in June.
It's the whole Yankee schedule this year, honestly. It's the games are strange on Saturdays. There aren't very many night games either that are good for these events. So anyway, so we're doing it. It's going to be fun. You're not going to be there. We're going to have a great time. We'll tell you all about it. I'm sure you'll see things. Hopefully you'll see us on TV. We're right around 200 people for this thing. It's going to be packed. It's going to be a blast. Everybody's going to be going to the dugout pregame. Tickets. So day game was today, Wednesday, again, kind of threw off the box office. So I'm waiting for some of those tickets to get transferred over, into our account. And then as soon as they do, we will send them out as well. So they will be transferred over. T-shirts are in the mail. That is confirmed with my t-shirt people. I'm loving the shirt because it came to me 2 weeks ago with this design. And I've been thinking about it for a while. Some spin on Houston, we have a problem. Obviously, everybody knows that from the Apollo mission, NASA, Houston. There's your context. So now I'm thinking.
Okay, do people need that?
I don't know.
That's
I don't know.
Very common phrase.
Is it though anymore? I don't know. I could be dating myself. I don't know what I'm dating myself anymore or not. That's the old moment when you're not sure if what you're saying other people get. So that's it. But so the t-shirts are Houston, you have a problem. Bombers ready for launch. And I'll be damned if everybody isn't coming back for this goddamn game. Literally,
yeah.
Everybody. Judge is going to be back.
They're saying Judge back Friday.
Yeah.
Which, great. The sooner Judge is back, the better. But
and it's a night game on Saturday, so they shouldn't sit his ass.
Oh, because like it did, because Stanton, for example, yeah. Stanton and Didi both sat today's day game on Wednesday, and you're thinking of Stanton, like, he already needs a day off, but it's a day game after a night game, they'd be extra careful with him. Yeah, if he does come back and play on Friday night, he should also play on
Saturday
night. However, it is Sunday Old Timers Day.
Here comes the pessimistic. Yep.
I'm just being realistic. It's Sunday Old Timers Day, and I don't know if they want to, you know, say, well, it's going to be a sellout on Sunday. We got to make sure. It's probably going to be a sellout all weekend.
Yeah, Verlander's pitching on Sunday, I think, too. You know, it's Tanaka. Tanaka's pitching on Saturday, it looks like, right now. So, look, it's going to be a blast. Either way, we have the majority of people back for this thing. I'm excited. I know a lot of people are excited to do this. So, yeah, so Friday or Saturday, we will be partying up at the dugout and then at the game. Then June 29th, there's a New York watch party for the London series. I know Keith and JJ will actually be at those games in London. They're doing a pregame. So if you are a Yankees fan or you know any other Yankees fans that are going to London, JJ and Keith are going to be over there. We're doing a pregame. The bar is called the Balls and Bats. Let me get the name of it. Keep going with the other ones because let me get the name of it.
Okay, it's definitely not the Balls and Bats.
It's something like that.
But yes, there's going to be, if you're in London, like Scott just said, let JJ and Keith know. The George's Box guys are going to be over there. They're doing meetups. There's also going to be a watch party in New York City at Tavern 29 on June 29th. That's a 1 p.m. game. We have an area at the bar set up. Right now, estimating about 30 people coming. More people might roll in. They might bring people along. You don't need a ticket or anything for this. Just show up at Tavern 29. Ton of Yankee fans are going to be there watching the game. I'm going to have the Bronx Pinstripes flag and all that kind of stuff. Have a few beers. It's going to be a blast. July 6th is the Tampa Evasion first invasion, not evasion. The first Bronx Pinstripes road event. Those tickets are also coming up on the deadline, right?
Yeah. So if for me to get t-shirts out, I got to get them out soon. So we had originally said the deadline was Wednesday. We're going to stretch it to the end of this weekend. So if you're in Tampa or you know people in Tampa, Yankees fans in Tampa, if you have friends on the fence, get them going. We have like 75 people, I think, right now, give or take. So I want to get to that 100 mark, over 100. I think if we roll in there with 100 people, it will be fantastic. It's $69. You're getting a shirt, which we'll announce the design soon. It's going to be fun. And then we're doing a pregame at Ferg's, which is across the street, and the captains of the BP crew chapter down in Tampa set that up. So got that going on. Jared, before I forget, the London, and it is called the Bat and Ball. So,
okay.
Yeah, here we go.
This is the first time they're getting baseball over in London. I didn't think they'd have a bar called the Bat and Ball unless did they rename it for this very purpose.
I mean, I can't imagine they did that, but it's called the Bat and the Ball, Bat and Ball in London, and it's
speaking
on...
Speaking of the London games...
It's on West Stratford Unit. I'm not even going to read this address.
People have Google. They can freaking look it up. I was listening to John and Susan yesterday. Whenever I was listening to John and Susan, they're already complaining about the press box at the London Stadium.
Why? It's small?
They have to share it, apparently, with the Red Sox broadcasters.
Oh.
Yeah.
So Susan was not happy about that. A Jerry Remy, John Sterling.
So I don't think it's actually the TV, because the TV, there's not going to be local TV. I think it's the local radio broadcast. I think both games are nationally televised, correct?
Yeah, but Sterling will be there, right? Oh, so Remy won't.
Sterling's going to be there, but I don't know if the TV guys are going over. I'm sure Michael Kay is going to go just because.
Actually, I don't think he is going.
Okay. So yeah, I doubt the Yes guys or the Nesson guys are going to be going.
Yeah. That's crazy. I didn't even think about that. But it doesn't matter. I want John Sterling to represent. He's going to take over the room. I don't care how small it is. I don't care who he's sharing it with. John Sterling's going to take over the room. And Susan's going to be there with him. And it's going to be glorious. I hope they think.
King and queen.
King and queen. It's going to be great.
So the anything else to talk about before we move on?
And then July 20th is the Colorado series. So if you're coming to that game, get those tickets. It seems like we have a pretty much a game like every week. So.
So with the sweep of Tampa, the Yankees are now 7-2 against the Rays, which is awesome, because look up and down the, except the Blue Jays, who they've only played three times, but they've handled Boston, they've handled Baltimore, and they've handled the Rays. They have three more games against the Blue Jays coming up. Hopefully they'll handle them too. Tuesday's game. So I don't know what the hell is going on with these rain delays. So they had an hour and 20-minute rain delay on Tuesday night. And then they started the game, and it was still raining.
It was pouring. It was raining pretty hard.
Again, you're going to delay an hour and 20 minutes. Delay it an hour and 45 minutes and just start when it stopped. Because it stopped raining by the second inning. So J-Hap, again, here we go, pitching again for the third time in a rain environment.
Yeah.
Where they start the game and it's still freaking raining. I don't understand it. I know they set a time because their radar tells them, oh, the moisture's moving out at this time. Well, look up the sky. If raindrops are hitting your eyeballs, don't start the game.
Yeah, no, it's weird. And then, you know, they're canceling games when the forecast doesn't change, right at game time. They're doing weird things. I don't know where this information's coming from or who's making these decisions, but I don't like it. Maybe the nerds have taken over the weather game too. You know, maybe there's some metric that they're looking at now and says, well, hey, the rain is falling, but by the time we get this, the tarp off the field and all of the cat litter or whatever the hell it is onto the batter's box, the rain will be gone.
Is that what they drop, cat litter?
We used to call it cat litter. And yes, you can use cat litter.
I've heard you can use cat litter to get out of like an icy situation, like if you're stuck in the ice or the snow.
Yeah, that you can definitely do that, or sand. But you can
use essentially the same thing.
You can use. We've done it because I've played in an adult league for years, and you know, basically everybody on the field is keeping that thing dry or trying to play on it because we all want to play. And we've gotten cat litter before and used it. So
you know,
work.
If you guys have to play through a little rain, I don't care. But I'd prefer that the Yankees don't have to play through rain, risk injury, and poor performance. Hap didn't look great to start the game. I don't know if it was rain affected. I'm not going to use that excuse for him. He ended up going through five innings. That's all they needed because the bullpen was fully rested thanks to Tanaka. So they were able to go Ottavino, Canely, Britton, Chapman to combine to go four innings, two hits, one run, seven strikeouts to lock that game down.
Yeah, just like it's dialed up. I mean, I said this in the post game talking about Hap. It's not the optimal situation. If you're looking at what, you know, how you would draw up a performance by Hap, you want him to go deeper into that game. But he did get through five and the bullpen was rested because of Tanaka's start. And, you know, Paxton went six innings the day before that. So they had some guys that were rested, ready to go, and they performed. That's how you draw it up. That's how they want to see if a guy can't get into the sixth inning. Well, this is what they have that bullpen for. And the bullpen's deep, so they pitched well. I know Canely gave up a run.
Canely gave up a run. He walked the first batter, right? And it came back to score.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just...
Whatever. They locked it down. They had a little bit of a wiggle room. And look, this is the other thing about that Hap is everybody loves to shit on Hap. And I think it's because of his age, which is ageism, by the way. I take offense to that. And the fact...
Younger than you.
And the fact that he I feel like he looks 10 years older than me. But he, you know, he's got that third-year option. All goes well. It could vest, but there's a lot of things that have to happen. So people are talking about, oh, we have him for two more years. Well, if we do have him for two more years, the second year probably went okay. Probably not going to be too mad about the fact that he's there for the third year because
good way to look at
it's
it.
The only way it vests. So, but I mean, look, this is a guy that didn't have his great stuff on this day. Still fought through seven, gave up seven hits, got out of trouble. Give up two runs. He didn't walk anybody. So you're looking at the base runners, got through it. And when a guy doesn't have his good stuff, going in these rain delays, these weird things, like that's what I need. I need you to battle, get through five, six innings, and give this team an opportunity to win. And that's what he did.
No home runs allowed either, which that's pretty rare for him this season.
Yeah, it's big time right there because you're waiting for the big one, and it didn't come.
So Stanton's also comes out. He makes a really nice play into the stands and a fan trying to Bartman his ass over in right field. Mr. Poncho guy just totally whiffed on a ball and Stanton made a nice catch. But he goes 0 for 4, two strikeouts. And I was joking about this on Twitter saying, how many at-bats does Stanton have to go hitless before he starts getting booed by the Yankee fans? Well, it's four at-bats because he got booed after his last at-bat.
I feel like those are just like, let's go through the motions and get these boos over with. Because they come.
I just think people, for whatever reason, like booing Stanton.
Probably. I mean, it's the dollars. When you see a big guy like that and the dollars attached to it and the fact that he was hitting home runs in the minor leagues, then he goes 0-for up top here. And we've seen so many guys. There's this narrative that's just not that true about the strikeouts are down, hits are up, and all those things. Like, if you look at the numbers, they're actually really damn close to last year. It feels like they're different. Definitely does. but the numbers are pretty close. And when you see
you're talking about team-wise,
team-wise. And when you see our guys come up, like the desperate, the really, really cynical people, the desperate ones who are holding on to this just negativity and hatred and just want to be pissed off at everything, are the ones booing and like they're pissed off that Stanton's there striking out.
Most of the people who are booing are remembering his ninth inning at bat of the ALDS against the Red Sox last year, looking totally helpless.
I'm not even giving him that much credit. I think they're booing because he is a big guy, makes a ton of money, just came up and struck out.
So Stanton goes 0-for-4, gets booed. How many at-bats would Judge need to go hitless before he starts getting booed?
A lot. Because people will fight the people that are booing them.
I'm thinking at least... It's got to be like something crazy, like 24 at-bats.
It's got to be that, and it also has to be situational where it's happening in bad times, because otherwise people are just going to feel bad for Judge.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. People, if he goes 0-for-15, people are going to be like, well, look, they rushed him back. Yeah. He's not ready to play.
Oh, yeah. There's two such massive differences between these two guys. They look similar. They're massive people, and they mash the ball. But one of them, not getting paid. One of them, homegrown. The other guy, former MVP.
But we know even if Judge gets a big contract from the Yankees, it's not going to change. They're still going to love him. Jeter got a big contract from the Yankees, and he never got booed. Did he? I don't remember him ever getting booed.
I mean, I'm sure there were times when he got booed. Nobody remembers that, and nobody wants to. Again, those people got fought in the stands.
You don't want to be noticed as the guy booing Judge or Jeter. You will get a beer dumped on you. You will get something thrown at you. It will be bad news for you.
You deserve it. Don't boo those guys.
But if you're booing Stanton, whatever.
He's a hired gun. That's what people think.
Yes. CeCe finally got his 250th. All right, can we move past this now? He was stuck on 249 since May 22nd. He joins the 250 wins, 3,000 strikeout club. It's a very exclusive club. I'm going to rattle off these names very quickly. Walter Johnson, Greg Maddux, Roger Clemens, Steve Carlton, Don Sutton, Nolan Ryan, Phil Niekro, Gaylord Perry, Tom Seaver, Randy Johnson, Burt Blyleven, Fergie Jenkins, Bob Gibson, and now CeCe Sabathia. How's that?
Look, he's knocking off these milestones. You got the 250, which is probably the new 300. He's got the 3,000.
Definitely. No, it definitely is the new 300.
Well, I mean, he needs these milestones because baseball needs the milestones, right? You need these nice round numbers that are big. And whether they change on the sliding scale of the, you know, the times for baseball writers to in their heads, you know, make sure that they can, make a good decision and feel good about it and actually defend it. So they have a number to hang their hat on. Right. He's getting these numbers now. So I think this is pushing to his conversation and his ballot, future ballot for Hall of Fame, really getting into that place where it's going to be hard to keep him out. I think the narrative of CeCe being a Hall of Famer has changed a lot in the last year and a half.
Maybe amongst non-Yankees fans.
Well, I think that's who you have. And writers, I think people are looking at him differently. I think the fact that he resurrected his career, not that it was like not that it was horrible, but he's gone through personal things. He's come out. He's always been a good guy to the media. He's always been a good guy in the clubhouse.
Yeah, that's the thing. He's liked, which also helps. Because if you're on the bubble, liked, right, if you're on the bubble, which I don't think even Sabathia is on the bubble. I think he's clearly a Hall of Famer. But if you're on the bubble and you're liked by all the media, you get in.
I think that's right. Yeah. And I think that's a big deal. If you treat the media well, then they treat you better. Which, you know, it should be about the accolades on the baseball field. That's how it should be. But it's not.
It's not.
There's a human element to it. But I think
he's
really
getting... How long until we have robot Hall of Fame voters?
I don't think that'll ever happen.
I don't know.
I don't think that'll ever happen. You can't. Unless those robots can test for steroids.
I mean, what's the difference between that and just peeing in a cup and then having a test come up positive or negative?
All right, so now the robots are going to be getting these samples.
Robots are taking over. I've seen Terminator 2.
Look, that's fine. That was a long time ago, too. I'm still waiting for those robots to come out. You know, the nerds in the tunnel are probably the closest thing.
Yeah. The Yankees also kicked the snot out of Blake Snell today, which was great. They knocked him out in the first inning. He had nothing. He threw more balls than he did strikes. The Yankees scored six in the first inning. They had another six-run inning later in the game. Sanchez, three-run home run. DJ LeMahieu, who I have some home road split stats because you remember we talked about, I'll get to it in a minute, but DJ LeMahieu, another hit with runner in scoring position. Gleyber Torres, his first grand slam. So I don't, this series, you win 2 out of 3. That would have been great, but they end up sweeping. And I did not think going into the game with Blake Snell versus CC Sabathia, we were going to see a sweep.
No, I mean, absolutely not. And the fact that they got to him so fast is awesome because it gave CC a little bit of room to work.
Yeah.
It definitely, I think, allowed him to, you know, just get into that game a lot faster and not have to press.
He goes 6 innings, which for him is a long start. And I think what we saw today versus his last couple starts, he gave up more soft contact. He did also strike out a bunch of guys, but he was keeping the Rays hitters off balance. And it's such a fine line with Sabathia because he's trying to do the same thing every start. He's trying to pitch on the corners. He's trying to use his slider, backdoor cutter, backdoor slider, inside cutter, inside slider. So it's like he's pitching the same way. It's just a slight difference with him, and it's a difference between getting crushed and pitching well.
That's the thing. Like so the new Sabathia is a guy that's going to walk people. That's just going to happen. There are going to be runners on base, whether it's, you know, there were a couple, like you said, soft contact. There was an RBI bloop over Voit's head, like, you know, little things, that little ducks that were falling and just finding green. You have to live with that stuff because that's what he's trying to keep these guys off balance. They're going to throw the bat at it. Occasionally it's going to fall, but he's also going to walk guys because he has to live on the corners. He's going to be off the corners. And when you're doing that, if these guys can lay off these pitches, he's going to walk people. He just lives with that. He knows that's happening. And if he's not on a given day, some of those walks might be left over the plate, and that's when you have problems. So if he's missing outside the zone, I think you're going to get you'll get more walks, but you're going to get a much more effective start from him because the contact's going to be soft.
Right. So earlier in the podcast, you mentioned that when the website first started, you had just gotten married, right?
I did. Just got married.
Do you remember, how did your suit look? How did your tux look?
Phenomenal.
Was it baggy as hell? Because that was the style back in like the
2009,
2010.
I didn't get married in the mid-90s. Okay?
No, but I feel like even you look back 10 to 12 years ago and the suits, it looks stupid. Like the suits look stupid. just be honest.
Okay, so we had a gray suit. Nice, and it was just relatively clean. I thought about what the pictures would look like in 20 years.
Yeah, gray is a classic color. You go with a gray suit.
It was a gray pinstripe, like a light pinstripe. It was very classic. It was, you couldn't see the pinstripes. It was nice.
Yeah. Well, I'm very excited to talk to you guys about a new sponsor that we have, Indochino. Indochino, whether you're looking to outfit your entire groomed party for your wedding, or you're looking for a new suit for just a night out, or maybe a wedding or a job, they make custom made-to-measure suits. No more generic off-the-rack stuff. What's great about them is you can go into one of their showrooms. They have, I believe it is 40 showrooms in North America, and you can actually get measured head to toe, which, like we just talked about, I hate the baggy suits. If you're buying off the rack, maybe the pants don't fit quite right. Maybe the jacket arm is a little too long. Then you got to take it to another tailor. Indochino is going to handle all of it. If you're looking to get married, there's tons of options to outfit your entire wedding party. Like I said, I'm getting married in a couple months, so I'm very excited about using Indochino. You can also customize things. They have quality fabrics. You can monogram the inside of your jacket, or if you're getting a shirt. I know we just ordered a couple shirts because we started to use their service. You can get a monogram on your shirt as well. You can book an appointment at any showroom with your wedding party. Choose your customizations, submit measurements with your choices. You can also submit measurements online if you can't get to one of their showrooms, if you live in the middle of nowhere, apparently, and, you know, just go online and do it. Our listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $369 at Indochino.com when you enter code Bronx at checkout. That's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. $369, first of all,
that's
nice.
That's a deal.
That is a great deal. That suit, like I said, you can wear it to your wedding. You can wear it to someone else's wedding. You can wear it to your job if you have to work in a fancy office. For $369, your suit's going to look damn good instead of spending maybe slightly less to get off the rack and it looking like crap and falling apart. So, again, go to Indochino.com. Use promo code Bronx to get any premium suit for just $369 and free shipping. All right. I mentioned DJ LeMahieu. Eighth home run. Congratulations. One step closer to number 20.
You just missed one off the... got robbed by the short porch today.
We mentioned when the Yankees signed him, is he a Colorado player? Are his home splits an indication that maybe he's not going to be as great with the Yankees? And we kind of said, well, Yankee Stadium's a hitter's park, so if anything, he'll have also really good home splits, so maybe it'll even out. Turns out, he's been better on the road than he is at home. He's been good at home, but he's been fantastic on the road. His home splits, 290 batting average, 783 OPS. He has 24 RBIs. I know he had two more RBIs on Wednesday, and a 315 batting average on balls in play. His road stats, 336 batting average, 845 OPS, three home runs, 22 RBIs, and a 368 batting average on balls in play. So that might just be looking at a little bit bigger ballparks on the road, so he's more hits are dropping. But he's actually been better on the road. Good overall, can't complain overall, but slightly better on the road.
Well, I mean, I think he's just a really good hitter. That's the key. He sprays the ball. Confirm. Yeah, he sprays the ball around, and that's why I think when we saw what he did in Colorado and we saw the type of player he was, you know, I know you and I were both excited about him because he fits this lineup so well. He just adds a very different element to what they had last year.
He's also exceeded all expectations
by a ton. Yeah. Well, I mean, the fact that he's so clutch as well. I mean, is he hitting 500? Is it over 500 yet? Because it's damn close.
Last I saw, I think it was like 479.
Yeah, so the guy just keeps coming through with runners in scoring position as well. He's a machine out there. Literally, that's the nickname machine that Gary Sanchez gave him. I think it's perfect because when you're the nice thing is one of the things that we heard about that was appealing for the Yankees was the way that he can go the other way. The fact that the home park does play to him, and if you look at his numbers back in Colorado, the last couple of years, you can tell there was a difference in home runs. There was a little bit more power. The launch angle was different, and you're going to see some of those. This is why I made those predictions, because I'm predicting some of the doubles that he hit in the past to go over the fence. And I mean, we're seeing small sample, but he's got more home runs versus three.
I actually think now, knowing the type of player that LeMahieu is, he's a line drive hitter.
Yes.
I think bigger ballparks play to him better. Colorado, even though the ball flies, is a gigantic outfield. So a lot of his line drive hits, maybe even that could be caught in some other shorter right fields or shorter left fields, they're going to drop, which is why I think we're seeing a higher batting average on balls in play, 368 on the road. He's playing in more ballparks that are bigger than Yankee Stadium. Like today, that line drive that he got robbed on to right field might drop in other ballparks.
Yes. The thing is, but the other side of that is that at Yankee Stadium, those line drives are going out.
But not that many. Five.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And you should be scared. You know why you should be scared?
I'm not scared.
Did you see the yoke that he hit the center field? 415 plus or something like that. It was significantly over the fence. I mean, we're talking some serious power with LeMahieu. I think LeMahieu is kind of like the Ichiro in the sense where if he needed to and wanted to, he could probably be a 30 home run guy.
Yeah, well, listen, I really want you to be wrong. I've learned in doing this podcast, it's kind of tough because I want the Yankees to win, obviously. But I also want to be right. And I don't know what I want more in some cases.
Well, you have to. Here's the thing. You wouldn't be right. Because you didn't really make predictions, you wouldn't be right. I would just be wrong, and that's all you're looking for.
That's fine. I'll take it. Yeah. You being wrong, I'll
take it. I just
want to
make that distinction, you know what I mean? Because, you know, by putting myself out there and being very, very accurate so far, I'm pretty happy about it.
And then you say Luis Sessa is having a breakout year?
Yeah, you got to pick the one guy. The one guy. The one thing I did that was bad.
All right. You're talking about how accurate your predictions
are. That was the only one. Luis Sessa is not living up to the bill. I just want him off the team now so I can stop talking about it.
So when the lineup is fully healthy, it is a murderer's row lineup. Do you keep LeMahieu leading off?
Yeah, I love LeMahieu leading off. I think he's the perfect leadoff guy. I know that sometimes they will probably want to switch it around and get Hicks in there because he's a lefty bat. I don't mind sprinkling Hicks.
Hicks has not been great. I mean,
no, I know that. But I think they want, you know, they're going to want that lefty bat in there. And if it's either Gardner or Hicks, I could see them. Gardner still gives tough at bats. I know people are like all about shitting on Gardner these days because, you know, the other guy got sent down. But And there's another guy up there that's playing better than Gardner currently.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of haziness around Brett Gardner and his status. But he's still a gritty ass player. Still gives good at bats. And he's I still think he's a good leadoff guy when put in there. I don't think he's an everyday leadoff guy anymore by any means. But LeMahieu should be that guy.
With the addition of Encarnacion, it actually makes the lineup even more right-handed heavy. Yeah. I don't really care because they're all good hitters. But if you were to just stack the lineup where you want to get your best hitters up most often, while coupled with making sense of where guys should hit, I would do LeMahieu, Judge, Sanchez, Stanton, Voit, Encarnacion. That's a top six, all right-handed.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but you're getting cute if you're trying to force a lefty in there for only reason.
The only
to force
way
a lefty.
It would be is Hicks leading off, like you just said. But then I'm not batting DJ LeMahieu seventh or eighth.
Yeah, no, but you could also, I mean, you could toy around with, like, when Didi was going really well, and if he's going offensively well, you could plug him in somewhere on the top as a lefty
bat. I know,
bat.
I know, and he breaks up the lineup nicely, and he did it last year, but with the way Gary Sanchez has been hitting this year,
yeah.
You got to get him plenty of at-bats, which is why I'd bat him third and bat Stanton fourth.
I have no problem with that. I honestly don't want Stanton in the three spot. I think that Sanchez right now, the way he's seeing the ball, because that's the thing. He's seeing the ball really well. That thing looks like a beach ball to him. I want him getting a ton of at-bats.
Right.
So, yeah, I think that I think right now when you're looking at the way that if you're talking about power production, the way that he's making barreling up the ball, he's the most dangerous hitter on this team.
And if the lineup is what I just said it is, then you're looking at a 7, 8, and 9 of Didi, Hicks, Glaber, which would be 1, 2, 3 in most other batting orders.
That's the thing. We could throw out 15 different mixes of lineups and it doesn't matter because it's all heavy production in the middle, heavy production, whether you sprinkle in one guy here or the next guy, a couple back, they're all massive home run hitters.
You mentioned Gardner. Cameron Maben is the other guy you were referring to. So Cameron Maben, people are all on the Cameron Maben bandwagon.
It's
right
pretty
now.
Hard not to be, man. It's pretty
no,
hard
I've
not to be.
I loved what he does, and he's exciting. Like, you can just tell he's having
a great time.
A freaking awesome time. Yeah. And he knows he's playing for his job. He knows his job is probably not going to be with the Yankees. Because I don't know if you keep Maben as a fifth outfielder, when are you going to play him?
I mean, you'll find the ways to play him. I think you'll because you're trying to get other guys rest. I think that's the key, is trying to keep other guys fresh. And if that's becoming a priority, and they think that they can carry that fifth outfielder, then there's a very good possibility. Because I mean, it's going to be very hard to say goodbye to Cameron Maben and keeping a guy like Luis Sessa right now, or a guy like.
Oh, I know. It would definitely have to be a bullpen arm, and I think people have also talked about this because the Yankees have off days around the London series. Luis Sessa or David Hale or Cortez, those guys aren't going to get in those games. You're not going to use those guys if other guys are rested. So you can delay the Maben decision by sending down one of the bullpen arms because you have extra off days at the end of next week.
But what does that mean, though, delaying the decision? Is that just, are we just delaying, really just trying to push it off until he slumps
you're biding your time. You're biding your time to either A, trade him and get some value for him,
yeah.
To B, make sure your other guys are healthy, because what if Stanton or Judge come? What if you release Cameron Maben when Judge comes back? He gets picked up by another team, because he will get picked up by
another
team.
Don't say what you're going to say.
How could you? It took these guys 2 months to come back.
I know.
What if Judge or Stanton is not fully healthy and they need to go back on the injured list? And then you're saying, ah, crap, we could really use Cameron Maben right now.
That's the thing. I mean, but that's what you're dealing with when you have a veteran guy who comes in and outplays what you were expecting, because he was never supposed to do this. It's not like he was a guy that they coveted. I mean, it's Cameron Maben who's bounced around to 97
teams.
They
picked him up out of necessity.
I know. That's the thing. So you're never going to expect a guy like this to make this decision. You're happy. You're glad. It's a good situation that you have a tough decision to make, but it doesn't make it easier. So yeah,
I don't know,
just waiting for him to slump.
I don't see playing time for him as a fifth outfielder. And then what good is having him with the way this roster is used and the names we just rattled off for the starting lineup? When are you, Cameron Maben plays, gets 3 at bats a week? Really? That's what we're saving Cameron Maben for? Like, I love what Cameron Maben has done, but I'm not saving him for 3 at bats a week.
So, I mean, it boils down to the fact that you're also, what are you saving Luis Sessa for? Mop up duty. And that can be.
Well, with the way the rotation and the pitching staff
that could
is,
be something that's important just Luis to get those innings.
I would release Luis Sessa. I think he's out of options and he's pitched crappy. So find someone else to be mop up, but this team does need mop up guys in a lot of scenarios.
But that's the
thing. Especially if they're opening one every five.
Well, that's one of the big things. So but the thing is you just said, even if it's not Luis Sessa, it's gotta be somebody. So that still takes up that roster spot on the 25.
Yes, I think with the way that Cashman and Boone and this team runs,
yeah.
Extra pitcher versus extra batter. Especially with a DH scenario.
It's just hard to see that, I think, as a fan perspective when you're talking about that 25th guy and it's Cameron Maybin, who's been unbelievable on the field, off the field, over exceeded every expectation you could possibly have because there were none. And then you keep Luis Sessa because of mop-up duty. It's a tough sell.
He homered in four straight games. Yeah. He's got an 882 OPS, a 137 OPS plus, and he has provided them 0.7 war. In less playing time than Clint Frazier, who played 53 games versus Cameron Maybin's 40, hit 11 home runs, 843 OPS, 122 OPS plus, only 0.3 war, mainly because of his defense. And then you look at Brett Gardner, who I don't think is going anywhere because he can play defense. He can play center field and left field. Cameron Maybin, I know, played center field last year, but he has not played center field this year. And if you look at his defensive metrics in center field, the last time he played there, he was bad in center field. So I think this team would lean Gardner, not just because he's Gardner number 11 and a lifetime Yankee,
honestly,
because he's better defender.
But you could also stop the conversation with what you just said, too.
No, I know I could, even though he's not producing as well as Cameron Maybin is right now. Brett Gardner's got a 755 OPS. Cameron Maybin has an 882 OPS.
Look, the other thing about this, though, I think that people kind of need to open their eyes about as well, is we're celebrating these players and what they've done for us very, very recently, and that's good. We should, because they've been amazing with the way that this team has dealt with injuries. These guys have all stepped up. But if you go down and start looking at careers and you try to find out who this guy is, and you're waiting for the shoe to fall, the other shoe to drop, you know, in a month. Is Cameron Maybin going to be a better player on this team and a better fit than a guy like Brett Gardner? You have to look at what Brett Gardner has done for this entire his career as well, because we've seen him come up in big situations. We've seen him play defense. We know the type of player he is. He's healthy. He's not playing as much. You know, maybe he will be better down the stretch. I'm just saying, like, when you're looking at this, it can't be just a rash decision on what's happening right now. You also have to look at this guy. He's not a young guy. It's not like he's all of a sudden, you know, getting into his prime. He's 32, 33, what do you say, 33, 34 years old. I mean, it's what he's doing right now is wild and crazy, and it's awesome. But is it sustainable? And that's what the Yankees are going to look at. And it's a hard decision. Again, like, I love him. I love what he's doing. I don't want him off the team, but it's a numbers game. It is what it is.
No, but I'm sure they're also looking at Cameron Maybin and like you just said, well, what's he going to be in a month or a month and a half? The way that we're looking at Gio Urshela now, seeing some regression in his game.
Right.
It was beautiful for a month and a half, but Gio Urshela is starting to come back down to the Gio Urshela we thought he was going to be.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean,
Cameron Maybin will probably do that too.
Right.
And Brett Gardner has not been great this year. He's been so streaky, mm-hmm. even more streaky than he normally has. Like, he goes into slumps where it doesn't even look like he's ever hit a Major League Baseball before. Like, 0 for 32. Like, these kinds of just absolute trash slumps. But he has 11 home runs, and then he gets hot for a couple games, saves his season, and on we go.
That's the thing. But when all these guys come back, he's got a different role, especially with Encarnacion on his team now. Unless there's a move, which I think a lot of people are still expecting another move potentially. But even if it stays...
A move for a pitcher, though, so not going to affect...
Right, yeah, because Frazier would... One of those guys would probably be... Either way, you're still having Gardner as your fourth outfielder, because if Encarnacion is on this team, he's the DH, right? So now we got three outfielders. That means Stanton's playing the outfield.
He might play first.
Judge is playing the outfield. Yeah, but they'll switch it up a little bit. But he's not going to be... Gardner's not going to be out in the outfield every day anymore. We're going to see Stanton in the outfield, I think, a lot more than we ever expected.
And Encarnacion is a great hitter. We mentioned this last time. But at the same time, I like the idea of having the DH spot open to get Judge and Stanton rest. And it's not open anymore.
It's really hard to say. I know, but it's really hard to look at this situation.
It's not a complaint.
I know it's not.
It's just.
But it's analyzing the situation and what it could be if there's more flexibility. And yes, that's a nice thing. But the guy that's filling that's clogging up that spot, if you will,
damn good.
Is freaking good.
He's really good. And part of what we didn't talk about last episode was a reason they also made this move is so he didn't go to a competitor. He didn't go to Tampa or he didn't go to Minnesota. I think those teams were both interested in Encarnacion. The Yankees were quoted, I think Boone quoted, saying it was too good to pass up acquiring Edwin Encarnacion, which was exactly what they said about Stanton, if you remember.
Yes, it is. It's a different deal, very different deal in the sense.
Very
of-
different deal. They're only paying $3.5 million for the remainder of this year. We said it was even more, but I did not know Tampa was paying part of his salary this year.
Yeah.
So had Tampa acquired him, they actually would have just been adding a player they're already paying for. The Yankees will be on the hook for the $5 million buyout if they decide to do that, which I think they will. So they're still well under that luxury tax, which Steinbrenner spoke today about. He was quoted as saying that if for the right move, we will break that $246 million threshold, which is the top penalty, which means you're paying the most tax and your draft pick goes down 10 slots. He said for the right move, we will do that, which is not what Brian Cashman said on the radio last week.
No, I mean, that's kind of not true. Cashman,
no, it's 100% true. No, I wrote about it today. There's a direct... I'm gonna pull up...
Hold on. Cashman was talking about that they're being conscious of it. That's what he said. Then read the quote, because I'm obviously not remembering it correctly. But
I'm pulling it up.
The quote that Hal is saying, and this is a very big caveat in his language, for the right move.
Yep.
What the hell does that even mean? Nobody knows what that means.
Because if they don't do it, the right move wasn't out there.
Exactly. So.
And he also said, we still have a lot of a decent cushion. So he knows they're not going to go over. He's just appeasing fans by saying, yes, we're willing to go over for the right move. Because if he said no, fans would have freaked out.
Look, there's a whole bunch of posturing that Brian Cashman does as well on the talk radio shows. And he goes around and does these tours. And while everybody thinks he's being, you know, completely contrite and just spilling everything out and being so honest to everybody, he's not. He's just not. He says the things that it sounds like he's saying the right things to the fans, and it sounds like he's being truthful, but he's holding things back. He knows what's going on in the background. He can't give up too much information.
You ready for the quote?
I'm ready for the quote.
So, asked about Keuchel. We were interested. We made an offer that we were comfortable with, and that was it. Atlanta made a higher one. It wasn't like a back and forth. We had two that we ultimately made, and we stopped, and we waited to hear if it was a yes or a no. We were very transparent about where we're at. There's a financial limitation until we go into the next luxury tax level, and that was obviously conveyed, and that pushes next year's number one draft pick back. There's a number of different penalties associated with it. So we're trying to stay under the second luxury tax penalty that crushes next year's pick.
Okay, trying. Conscious. All the same, we're all in the same ballpark here. There was nothing
that is.
There was nothing
when
definitive
asked about Keuchel, and he says that if they communicated that to Dallas Keuchel and his team, that to me is saying because of the luxury tax, we are only offering you this. Come on,
yeah,
you gotta admit that. That's what that quote says.
If their communication to Keuchel's agent is saying that this is as high as we're gonna go. Then yeah, then I could see that being a hindrance in the negotiations. But at the same time,
maybe that's why they didn't get a second shot at it. Right? Look, Brian Cashman's blaming Scott Boras for that.
But, if you're looking at this as Scott Boras, because Scott Boras is Scott Boras. I don't give a rat's ass who he's negotiating with. He's trying to get the biggest dollar possible for his client because it's setting up the next deal. He's always thinking about the next deal. And when you're trying to get as much money as you possibly can and you're dealing with the New York Yankees, you go back and talk to them. I don't care what they say.
I don't know. Brian Cashman is a very stern person.
No,
I think Scott Boras understands the relationship. And if Brian Cashman says, this is what we're offering, we're not offering over this because of the luxury tax penalty. And then Scott Boras says, okay, they're offering 11.5. That's as high as they'll go.
Yeah.
Oh, Atlanta's offering more. We're taking it.
I don't want to go down this whole road about the Keuchel Atlanta thing.
I'm not even talking about Keuchel anymore. But what I really want to bring up is that it doesn't seem like Cashman and Steinbrenner are saying the same things. Why are they not saying the same
thing? I just think they're using different language. That's all. And you're taking the trying to as a definitive no, and now Hal's going on the other side and spinning it the other way, saying, well, we will if it's the right move. So essentially he's saying, no, we're not going to unless it's the right move. He's just spinning the language. That's all this is. This is all
Hal
posturing.
Hal is just completely kowtowing to fans here.
It's fine. There's the good cop, bad cop. Right now, everybody is in love with what Cashman has done. He can be that guy. He's the guy. He's the negotiator. Hal's the money guy. He knows it. He's got the name Steinbrenner. He's going to appease fans. His name is Steinbrenner.
Do you want to know the dirty little secret? They could have signed Keuchel and traded for Encarnacion and still been under the 246.
Again, I'm still believing, I really truly believe, that there was something else
maybe
with Keuchel.
Maybe.
Because Scott Boras goes back to the Yankees. That's the big thing.
So Clint Frazier was sent down when Encarnacion was put on the roster. I very briefly mentioned this when I was just talking in the last episode, adding it in because the news had just broken and I don't even think I was thinking clearly. Oh, Clint Frazier was sent down. Yeah, I was expecting him to get sent down eventually. And then the more I thought about it, I'm like, wait a second. Clint Frazier was sent down before Mike Tauchman was sent down.
Yeah.
It's a clear message to Clint Frazier.
All right. There's a reason for this though. Because look, Clint Frazier is unstable. I think a lot of people know that. I think a lot of people realize what's going on here. I mean, the guy is a unbelievable hitter. For whatever reason, this roller coaster of emotions throughout this entire time, he's just doing weird stuff, man.
He's out of control. He's out of control.
He's doing weird stuff. And
he's deleting all of his Instagram posts and unfriending the Yankees.
I don't even think that's, first of all, that's not even accurate. I'm pretty sure he wasn't even connected to a lot of those guys. People were saying that I don't even think he did that because I don't think he actually followed them in the first place. I don't care
whatever
about
he
that.
Did, he deleted.
I don't care about. I don't care about
like
this middle school shit.
Girl yeah. Who gets mad and blocks her friends on Instagram when the sleepover doesn't go well.
Toxoplasmosis. Okay. Listen. Yeah. What was the corresponding move to Clint Frazier being sent down? He was the corresponding move to what?
A celebration for Encarnacion.
Okay, so what does Encarnacion do really well?
Mash.
He's actually leading the American League in home runs, right? Mm-hmm. Well, every time he hits a home run, that's 21 times. That's a lot.
22.
22 now. What does he do?
Walks the parrot.
He walks the parrot. I think there was a very real fear that Clint Frazier was going to attack Encarnacion and attack the parrot while rounding the bases in this home series, and they had to get rid of him before that. They knew Mike Tauchman would be well-behaved, and they had no idea where Frazier was going.
Because cats don't like birds?
Cats hate birds. Cats eat birds. And when you're picking up this horrible, this virus that is transferred fecally, I'm going to be honest with you, a lot of it's from cat urine, okay? There's contact.
That's not fecal matter.
Fecal and not fecal. Well, they shit and piss in the same place.
Excrement.
Look, cats
excrement.
Are disgusting. Okay, they're disgusting creatures. They just do
they
it.
Clean themselves.
They do it wherever they damn well please. And then you go
box.
And sleep in it. That's what happens. That's all. It's gross. Okay.
Clint Frazier slept in his cat's litter boxes.
No, he slept in piss, and probably cat shit at some point. Yeah, because they drop little fecal matters all over the place, and that's how he has it. It's on his pillow. The cat was farting on his pillow, and he got toxoplasmosis because he was kissing his cat on his pillow, where the farts were, fecal matter, toxoplasmosis. I'm telling you, all I know is that is what it does, and it makes them more aggressive. And when there's an invisible parrot running around from the guy that you know is about to take your job, your roster spot, they couldn't trust him. They had to get rid of him, so they sent him to Scranton.
I think it was a clear message to Clint Frazier that says we do not forget that you skipped talking to the media. And yes, we could keep you on the roster for 24 more hours, but instead we're going to keep Mike Tauchman on the roster for 24 more hours. You go report to Scranton. And he took every second he could before reporting to Scranton. You have 72 hours after being sent down for a player to report to wherever he's assigned to. He used all 72 hours. He's acting like a child.
Well, he had a full day of workouts today, quoted by Jay Bell.
I've defended Clint Frazier on a lot of things, and maybe he is trying to now shoot his way out of town because he sees the writing on the wall that he's not going to be a New York Yankee for his career, and he just wants to be traded. Why else is he acting like this?
Okay,
listen. Toxoplasmosis,
I'm not talking about the
Someone needs to tell him, Clint, do not delete your Instagram. You're going to come off like a child. Turn the phone off, go report to Scranton, and hit the baseball hard.
Yeah. He needs... it's true. Like, the... Even whatever he did with Instagram, it's just a bad look. It doesn't matter what happened. It's a bad look. It looks weird. Okay, so just don't do it. Your timing is terrible. He has a bad PR guy, or needs a PR guy or something, man. Because he's just going off rogue and doing whatever the hell he wants, which is probably the way it is. But the thing is the 72 hours. Okay, like everything that he does now, ever since the media thing, is gonna be blown up. So
that's
whether
his fault,
I know it's his fault. Whether it matters or doesn't matter, or is normal or isn't normal. I was looking at some of the tweets by Lindsay Adler. I think had it on there. Most guys do take the 72 hours. I know Talkman didn't. He needs a job badly. He's not a hot prospect. He's not going. He's going out there fighting for his life. And you have Clint Frazier, who takes the 72 hours. Who apparently most people do take that time. He reported today, had a full day, a good day of baseball activities, as quoted by Jay Bell, the manager of the Scranton Wilkes-Barre Rail Riders. So, and he's available today in today's game and going to be in the starting lineup tomorrow. So he's there. And look, hold on. The short-sightedness of him saying that I have no future as a New York Yankee would be crazy, because he would be the starting left fielder.
I think he's emotional, irrational, and 100% short-sighted. How else do you explain a lot of the stuff that he has done?
Look, I do think he's emotional and short-sighted in certain things. I think that's an immature quality that he's going to grow out of. I do think there's an immaturity.
So when he left Aaron Boone's office on Sunday night and found out I got sent down, he, instead of thinking to himself, okay, there's a bump in the road, I've performed at the major league level, I want to be on this team, I'm going to just shut up and go do my job.
Honestly, he should have
hops on his phone and freaking deletes his stuff. Like,
he talked to the media. You could tell he was upset about it. But here's the thing about that.
It's a bad look. And I'm running out of
ways
to defend him.
He should have expected it to happen.
Yeah, I'm expecting childish shit out of him now, which is why I don't think he's going to be on this team long term. Because they don't tolerate childish shit.
What I'm saying is that Clint Frazier should have absolutely known that he was going to get sent down.
Well, see, what I think is he knew he was going to get sent down at some point, but he didn't think he was going to be the first guy sent down. And that set him off into a tailspin, I think. I'm serious.
Yeah.
I am serious. When
he does get triggered very easily.
When you come to a conclusion in your mind, you can accept it. And then when that also doesn't happen, I think he loses his goddamn mind.
But then he goes out and destroys the baseball. And that's all I care about.
I don't think it's going to be at the major league level anytime soon.
Well, I mean, it's tough for him to be anywhere on this roster. It's because you don't want him as a fourth outfielder, fifth outfielder.
As we're talking today, he is behind. He's not only behind the starters; he's behind Gardner. He's behind Cameron Maben on the depth chart, and shit, he might be behind Mike Talkman with how they've done some roster.
He's also not behind Cameron Maben. And if he's on the major league...
Cameron Maben is still on the roster.
I understand that. And it's because he's out of options. That's the reason. The reason Clint Frazier was that if they were in the same situation and they were both out of options, do you think Clint Frazier would not be on this team? Because I do. I think Cameron Maben easily would have been the guy. It has nothing to do with it. It was a situational move.
Clint Frazier can't play defense, so he has no value as a bench
outfielder. No, I know. The way that the roster is right now, it's unfortunate for him because there's just not really an everyday spot for him. And it would be worse for him, I think, if he were to sit up there and not play. He needs
reps.
And
then the one day he gets in there, he makes an error in the outfield.
He needs reps.
It would be bad. Yeah. I just think that.
I mean, if the writing's on the wall, as he didn't talk, there could be a. It's very, very clear that there's potentially a trade with him involved.
I think that's the most likely scenario.
It seems like it. But at the same time, the Yankees also are looking at the talent, and the talent is definitely there. Whether you like him or not, the guy can play baseball. Offensively, he can rip. He's good. And he was much better in left field last year too, or the year before last when he was up. And, you know, if they think that he could trend in a higher direction and be an average left fielder, then he will probably be the starting left fielder for a long time with the New York Yankees, because Brett Gardner most likely will not be back. And Stanton and Judge will be, one of them will be more of a DH than
when you're just talking about a talent level, I agree with you. But there's so much more to this player than talent.
I know. And it's a matter of if they can play it out and if they can. But right now there's no roster spot for him either. So it's a tricky situation for everybody involved. And he's not making it easier. There's no doubt about it.
Couple of quick injury updates. Severino expects to throw from the mound for the first time next week, either on the 25th or the 26th. That's very good news. Betances still dealing with discomfort in his from his lat strain. Does not know when he's going to resume throwing. I think I heard a quote from him saying he's hopeful he'll be returning in the second half. That's vague. And Montgomery had a setback through 15 pitches in a bullpen, felt discomfort, and is being sent back for an MRI. I think is we actually put a news update on the site today. MRI on his shoulder.
Okay.
Not his elbow.
I mean, maybe that's good news in the sense.
It could just be soreness from not having. So if it was on his elbow, shit, bad news.
Right.
But shoulder, I don't think is devastating.
No, I mean, it's a setback for sure. And it may push him much longer out. But
well, I think what this highlights is the fact that if anyone was counting on Montgomery adding to this rotation this year, don't.
Yeah,
you can't. It's way too much of an unknown.
Yeah, it's way too much. And the shoulder, you know, again, you're trying to compensate. You're trying to come back from an elbow injury. And theoretically, he should be feeling great with the elbow. The elbow should be feeling fantastic at this point.
It's a bionic elbow.
Yeah. So you should, you know, maybe there's just he's just got to ramp up and just soreness, hopefully.
Yankees got to get revenge against Houston. They got swept in Houston in April. They blew two of those games in the seventh inning or later. That was a really tough series loss because they played well. They played better than Houston in two of those games and lost both of them. Houston's been dealing with injuries too. I know they just got Altuve back, I think. But Correa, Springer, Diaz, McHugh have all missed time. McCullers had Tommy John surgery. Their starting pitching is still carrying them. These metrics are just crazy. They're second in starter ERA. They're first in innings pitched per game. And they're first in quality starts. I hate quality starts. It's a bullshit stat.
Is it still the same? Is the quality start still the same?
Six innings, three runs. Yeah, which is not quality anymore. It was quality in the steroid era. I'm surprised they haven't changed that. They should. I said it should be a sliding scale. Six innings, two runs. Seven innings, three runs.
Okay.
Both are quality starts. Anyway, they have 42 of them. The next highest team has 34. So they're just blowing out the competition as far as starting rotation, depth, performance, everything. Yankees are missing Gerrit Cole. They are facing Verlander, though.
Yeah. Hey, the spin rate machine, man, coming out of Houston. So we all know that they have something in the water down there.
I don't think the Yankees have faced Verlander as an Astro in Yankee Stadium. It's always been in Houston.
And it's Old Timers Day too, right? So,
yep,
that's a big start for Verlander, and we know he gets up for those big starts. So it's not really great.
It's going to be Hap really great versus. News. It's going to be Hap against Verlander.
I love it. Love our chances here.
Win the first three games.
Do you think they
that's all I'm saying.
Do you think that that Tanaka had an extra day rest on Monday, right? I wonder if that was to line him up.
No.
Yeah, I think he did. Either way, I wonder if they intentionally were looking at trying to avoid Tanaka on Old Timers Day. You know, big day. No Tanaka. Not trying to ruin it again.
But they know it's the BP crew event. That's a big day.
It is a big day, but we have good winning streaks. Big
we definitely
big
win
days.
More than we lose.
Big Yankees days with Tanaka?
Not so much.
Not so much.
So Didi hasn't been doing his emoji tweets after the game. He won't talk about it. I saw a couple of the beat writers tweet that he doesn't want to be asked about it.
I think it's hilarious. I think it's so funny that there has to be a hard line drawn on emoji conversations.
So here's what I think happened. He was doing it and he's like, oh, this is fun. I'm getting a lot of publicity for it. And then he realized, I don't want to have to go run to my phone and tweet out a bunch of emojis after every game. So he just stopped wanting to do it. I mean, maybe he could have a gopher go do it for him, but he decided to just end it. My question to you is, do you actually care? People are acting like it's the end of the world.
Here's what's funny.
You at home listening, do you actually care? You can't possibly actually care about this.
I think it's funny because I feel like Didi, we have something in common with Didi right now, right? Like there's an expectation on social media.
I know where you're going.
There's an expectation on social media now, and like there's things that like we've been doing these videos. We've done like a Yankees win graphic for like years now, and you know what?
After a while, you're like, corner. Damn you back it. Yourself into a corner.
Damn it! Why did I start doing that? So
and then people, if you don't tweet, it's like the third inning and you haven't tweeted yet. Hey man, you watching the game? Yeah, I'm watching the game. I watch every freaking game, but I'm eating dinner.
We started doing Wallpaper Wednesdays last year on Instagram, and I'll be damned if on Wednesday that thing doesn't get out by like noon. The amount of DMs that come in, yo, where's the wallpaper? Where's the wallpaper? It's like you set an expectation. So I understand. Didi's like, guys, we're not going to talk about this anymore. We're not going to look about
it. It's over.
Every year the Yankees have like a weird gimmicky thing, like the whole thumbs down thing, or you know, the shooting the guns
year.
Or whatever the hell it is, or the four. So, you know, he's just trying to sweep it under like that was last year. I did it. I finished the season with it.
Yeah.
I'm done. I just learned to play the piano. I'm not sending out a freaking emoji tweet every time we win. It's annoying.
He was probably like, okay, the silver lining in me needing Tommy John surgery is I can end the emoji tweets.
There's no doubt about it. He regretted it big time.
Yeah. And if you really are missing the emoji tweets that badly, I think there's like five people now doing them because they're trying to go viral on Yankees Twitter. So look at those tweets. JJ and Keith at the end of their episode posed the question on their most recent episode on Wednesday. Would you trade the 2009 World Series to not have blown the ALCS in 2004? You don't get guaranteed a 2004 World Series win, but you get guaranteed not to have blown that 2004 ALCS and you give up that 2009 championship. JJ is preparing a blog. He's polling all of the writers on the site about this. I think that's going to go up at the end of the week. People are talking about it on Twitter. I think there's a poll that went up from George's Box.
Yeah.
You guys at home, think about it. Tweet them. Tweet us. I want to hear what you think, Scott. Would you give up the 09 championship to just not have blown that 3-0 lead in 04?
Okay. So this is a very hard question, actually. I think it's a very hard question.
Easiest question I've ever been asked.
I think for a lot of people, it's very hard. I would absolutely give up the 09 World Series for yep. the win and to step on the throats of the yes. Boston Red Sox. At that time, I don't feel the same way I felt then, and probably because we're not, it's not new anymore. It's not fun. Like we can't chant, 1918 anymore at the Red Sox fans. Like they would get really mad, like really mad. And it was awesome. And now, it's just...
That's gone.
It's gone.
They have a trump card against us always. Yeah, you guys have 27 rings. We came back 0-3.
Dave Roberts still haunts my dreams. I cannot... I hate it. So 09, again, this also is part of being a growing up in the 90s era and mm-hmm. the Derek Jeter era and like all of those World Series. So like 09 was kind of a throw-in. And honestly, yep. it was probably my least exciting World Series of all that I've seen. And I'm saying these are like very much first world Yankees problems that I'm talking about.
I know, right?
And
we're
I get
talking
it.
About a championship.
I get how spoiled this sounds, but to because history would change if 04 is different. That team might blow up.
I think it does. Yeah. And I think especially if they get... I forget where this was said. It might have been in that book, Feeding the Monster, or... Larry Lucchino might have said this something. If the Red Sox had got swept in 04, Terry Francona was getting fired.
Yes.
Even though it was his first year. And possibly Theo Epstein would no longer have been the general manager.
I think they would have burned the goddamn thing down. It would have been
so
bad.
So you're looking at a completely different Red Sox history had they not come back from that deficit. I also think, like you said, this completely depends on how old you are, because I've seen some people in our chat who don't remember the championships in the 90s, really. They connect more with that 09 championship. Even me, I was in 2000, the last championship they won, I was 12. But I still watch highlights from all of those championships. I can't remember the last time I've watched a 2009 World Series highlight.
Right.
It was bought and paid for. I was drunk the entire time because I was a junior in college. I would trade the 2009 championship for 04 so fast.
Yeah.
I would even contemplate
throwing
in the 99 championship.
Okay, no, I wouldn't do that. But
because 99 of the 90s dynasty is the least important. 96 is the first one. 98, you're the best team ever. 2000, you beat the Mets. You have to beat the Mets. 99 is kind of forgotten about. Chad Curtis was in that World Series. He's like a weird religious freak. I think he also might be in jail.
I think he's done some. Yeah, no, I think he's a bad
guy. Really terrible
things. I think he's a bad guy.
Yeah. So like.
But John Wetland's also a bad guy.
Yeah. That's, damn it.
Yeah. We
96 is still okay in my book.
So when I'm looking at like the history of some of the losses that happened, or like so 04 and 01 are by far the worst losses imaginable.
What were your reactions to both of those?
04, I was like shell shocked almost, you know, I was pissed off and shell shocked, and like I was in disbelief. 01,
I was angry in 04.
Yeah. 01, I was just like really disappointed. Like I was just like, it was just such an emotional time during that point anyway, that it was, it's like it was destiny that the Yankees were going to win that World Series. And then when it didn't happen, it's like, what?
I was confused.
Yeah.
I was confused. I was a 13-year-old who had never seen the Yankees lose. Yeah. Literally never seen them lose.
Yeah.
They'd won everything. And I remember sitting there. I vividly remember. Because the games were late always in the playoffs, but my dad would let me watch the games. And I used to make a bed for myself in the living room, like put down a bunch of pillows. I was laying on the bed, and I will always remember Mariano Rivera throwing that bunt away. And my dad goes, "They're going to blow it." And I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, "They're going to blow it."
Now, but we now know your dad a little bit too.
I think that was the turning point of my dad. Like, my dad still gets pissed off about like stuff from the 80s, but like he had been on such a high from all the 90s. He was like, "They're going to blow it." And I was like, "Dad, you don't know what you're talking about." And then they blew it. I was just so confused in 01. I was so pissed off in 04.
Yeah. I was, so yeah, no, 04 was like shell shocked and anger. And yeah, I was just out of college at that point too. So, you know, I was invincible, and I thought the Yankees were invincible, and I thought the Red Sox would never, ever, 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 ever. That was the thing. Like, I never put my head in a place anywhere close
to
thinking that the Red Sox would win a World Series, let alone beat the Yankees.
Yeah, it was impossible at the time to think of it.
Yeah.
And I would even say, I think the Yankees would have wiped the floor with the Cardinals that year.
Anybody whatever team got to that World Series was going to dominate.
But even if they didn't, it would have felt like 03. 03 is still a happy memory.
Yeah.
So you beat the Red Sox in the championship series. It's a happy memory. I think they would have won the World Series. But even if they don't, I think 05, 06, 07, maybe 09 doesn't happen anymore because they don't break the bank to win another World Series with Jeter and Posada and Mariano and everybody. But okay. Maybe you win one in 06. Maybe you win one in 07. The 07 team was freaking stacked.
That's the thing. Like, I think they would have won in 04, and I think they probably would have, you know, gotten another one or two, because the Red Sox wouldn't have been the same team.
No,
they would. That team would have been very different. There would have been. I think they would have imploded.
I think it would have got blown up, and then Pedro left after 04.
Yep.
So, or he left after 04 or 05. So then you no longer have the Pedro Schilling dynamic. You just have Schilling and his racist ass.
And when you have a bunch of idiots that are winning, that's fun. And like, they're all having fun, right? They're like, good. But when they're losing, that's just a disaster. Like,
get them out of town.
You're talking about bad things happening at that point. So
I think you and I are on the same page. I think a lot of younger people are not going to be on the same page with that, but
I understand how it looks. It looks totally,
You're trading a champion. You're trading a champion. Hardware for nothing.
Right.
Basically. Well, because an American League championship series win is really nothing, especially if you're the Yankees.
I think this decision gets this question gets really difficult if you say that they don't win the World Series in 2004 as well.
Like if you tell me definitively, they do not win the World Series in 2004, I still do it.
Me too.
I still take it.
I want.
They could get swept 100-0 by the Cardinals every single day. To not blow that lead against the Red Sox, it is worth it in my book.
The rivalry was so freaking hot at that point that I would have done anything for them to just not step on their throats and watch. Because I had a bunch of friends that were from the area that I went to school with, and from Boston, and they were big Red Sox fans too. So we had a really good group of like Yankees, Red Sox, we were unbearable for everybody else, and I wanted them to be miserable. I love those guys. I love those guys to death. Yeah. I would probably take a bullet for a lot of them, but I wanted them to be miserable so badly with the Red Sox.
It's the beauty of sports and the beauty of sports rivalries.
Yeah.
And what we would be talking about is how the Yankees swept and they just closed that deal in game four. We're going to be talking about how the Red Sox got embarrassed at home in the American League Championship Series by letting up 19 runs to the Yankees in game three and how the Yankees absolutely demolished them with no pitching. God damn it.
Anyway, here we go.
If you want to get into this action, go find JJ on Twitter. Go find Keith on Twitter. Listen to George's Box podcast. Rate and review both podcasts if you're a fan of both of them. If you just listen to ours, give us a rating and review. We really appreciate it. Next episode, we'll be doing mailbags. I will be recovering from a bachelor party. Scott will be recovering from a BP crew event. You and I should both be worthless next Sunday, so looking forward to that.
It'll be an interesting show. It'll be an interesting show. I usually don't remember a damn thing that happens during the games at those events because, I'm watching the game, but is it going into my brain? No, it's not. It's not.
Dead eyes.
Yeah.
All right, that's going to do it for us. We'll talk to you on Monday.
Hey, guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.